You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Saturday, March 31st, Steve Perry, Tim Vickery, and I'm Ian Clark, and we're back. Disappointed, frustrated. Toronto lose 1-0 to a Columbus Crew side that were there for the taking. Like last weekend versus San Jose, the story was one team is able to finish, while that other team is Toronto FC, who continue to struggle to find the final touch to hit the back of the net. We're going over the poor start to the season in contrast to Champions League, who's standing out in the loss, and what to expect in Mexico midweek, all in the next 35 minutes on Eastside Stand Up.
What an exciting game at Hero Field tonight.
It was exciting.
It was exciting.
Look, it was beautiful. It was warm out. It was cold.
It's a good start.
There was lots of chances.
Lots of fresh air.
Oh, beautiful fresh air.
Lots of chances. Yeah. Say lots of chances.
We're going to say
lots
that.
Lots of chances.
And there were some half chances.
Yeah. We're still unable to beat Columbus at home.
No, we haven't, because we're back. We're back from BMO Field.
Unvictorious at home.
On a 1-0 loss to the...
Unvictorious at home.
To the mighty... Fortress BMO. We're back from Fortress BMO.
Some traditions continue on.
Steve Perry to the
still
right.
Still can't win at home.
Is super amped on the way 2012 is
That was up. The best game I've seen all year.
That was, I give you this.
I think it's going to be the best game we're going to see all year.
That was certainly their best performance of the year so far in the league.
In MLS, that's fair.
For sure.
It has to be qualified, though. It was definitely their best performance of the year in the league so far.
And I think it might be the best one we're going to see. That's my prediction
Big
for the
words,
year.
Mate. Big words.
What do you mean, big words? We're all feeling it.
Yeah.
We're frustrated.
We're mad. Yes.
Look, it's a frustrating game. That was a frustrating game.
Yeah.
Because we had so many chances and didn't score. So, you know, that we're, I don't know, maybe it might be premature, but I'm just mad. That's all.
That's fair.
No, I can appreciate your madness.
We're all feeling the madness.
I can, because more than anything, I just felt, you know, it was very, very much like watching a lot of what we saw last year. And the two obvious things that frustrated me or maddened me was the overuse of the long ball in the first half and the disconnection between the back line and the front line almost entirely throughout the game. And it became quite apparent during the second half. It was almost like two teams. You had your forwards and your back line. And there was nothing in the middle to connect the two, and it was just if I was to sum up the way that the team looked tonight, to me it was hollow. You
know? Well, I want to say that I'm excited to see them embrace the long ball again. It seems like the long ball is a 50-50 kind of thing. You know, it's anyone's game. When you kick the ball up there, anyone's going to win it, right? 50-50. They're gamblers a bit, you know, and they've adopted this strategy for their charity. So it's nice to see them try and adopt this on the field as well. Maybe there's a sponsorship in this.
From Pizza
and,
Pizza.
And we were thinking that every time they kick the long ball, they should do an announcement.
This long ball is brought to you by the Pizza Pizza 50-50.
Why not?
That's an excellent.
There's lots of marketing opportunity in that.
Well, I think the actual long ball strategy should almost certainly be renamed the Danny strategy, because the way that they're playing, trying to feed Kovermans is almost exactly how they tried to feed Dicchio, with this like sort of lofted long ball, and it becomes so boring and predictable to watch. And both Danny Dicchio and Danny Kovermans aren't able to get in the air. They're not like agile enough to be able to get up there and win those balls.
So what's telling about this is that
it exhausts the team though as well.
It does. But what's telling about this is that in the era of Dicchio, we didn't have many strikers that were of, you know, any value. we do this time. We have like three or four of them on the pitch, and it's still not working.
I wouldn't.
Isn't that telling?
I don't think. I don't think.
I'm just supporting your argument.
Yeah, no, I don't think you can blame. I don't think you can blame.
It is telling, Steve.
I don't think you can blame Covermaz at all.
No. I'm not blaming him at
he's
all.
He's living off of scraps.
That's exactly it.
No, I agree with you. Thank you. Thank you for agreeing with me, Steve.
I'm agreeing with you.
We're all in agreement.
I think it's the problem yet again that we have is we can't score goals. We can't score goals.
Yeah. You know, it's painfully obvious.
That's three league
games. I wouldn't describe him as a world class striker, but we certainly have a higher quality striker.
Over the years, we've constantly asked for this, right?
And now we have him.
We have Ryan Johnson.
We don't have anyone to service him.
We have many strikers up there. It's not just one now. We have multiple on the field at all times. Like we're playing them consistently in our starting 11, and we still can't score. And that's, I mean, for the many years that we've been doing this podcast, we've been saying we need more strikers, and they still can't do it. What's wrong with them?
One of the most disappointing things for me is we were playing against the game against San Jose last week. We were playing against a weakened opposition at home, and we're playing against a weakened opposition this week at home in Columbus. And these are the opportunities that you would hope these home games against weakened oppositions would be able to come in with a fair shout and be able to sort of contend. You know, draws or wins would be nice, but we seem to have rolled over. And, you know, just a weakened opposition has us on the back foot, which doesn't bode very well, certainly for the road games. And it doesn't bode very well against we're coming in against a stronger opposition at home, where we're going to sort of, you know, actually be pressured.
Well, that's the saving grace of watching this game, is that it makes me feel like I've watched one of the better games that I'm going to see this year. Now, so I'm not as frustrated as I am of watching them come down minute after minute with attack after attack being fruitless. I felt they went right to the 90, and they continue to attack, which is something new that we haven't seen from this team. But connecting the dots here for why they can't score is the second point that you brought up at the beginning of this podcast, which is that there's two teams on the pitch. There's a front and a back, and there's not a linchpin between the two, which you were talking about. Maybe you can explain this a bit more.
Well, certainly when we saw in the earlier games in the season when Frins was still on the pitch, he was certainly playing that sort of sweeper role, coming in from the back line into the midfield.
He transitioned between the two.
Certainly allowed the midfielders to sort of occupy other space. And that transition position that he was playing allowed that sort of that service or utility midfield role to be filled by himself, where he could feed the ball up and connect the back line to the midfield and then midfield through to forwards. So they certainly look, well, more than anything, more fluid. I think one of the biggest criticisms you could have of them tonight was how static they looked.
Well, as a kid, I was always told that games are won and lost in the middle. And when you look at the positioning for Dunfield and Silva or Villa or whoever else is up in the middle, they play in the front, the top half, and De Guzman always drops to the bottom half, and there's no middle. We give up the middle. Mm. Suggests to me that this guy's not very good at chess.
Sparky, you're very quiet, mate. Is it just because you're like sort of you're torn up? Well,
a little bit torn up. I got one guy on the left, one guy on the right here. I'm kind of
tug of war here.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tug of war.
We're saying the same thing. We're trying to analyze this. We're breaking this down, right? And I think I don't know. Like it's it seems to me. At one point, we saw a top half and a bottom half and nothing in the middle. It just looked like they couldn't connect the dots.
I don't want to harp on about this, but I personally...
It's a strategy.
We have a holding midfielder in Julian De Guzman that really, I don't think, contributes much to it. I know that, you know, on the way back from the game, you know, there was some discussion that he kind of had some moments of you know, not greatness tonight, but certainly contribution. I just don't feel that he's right for it. You know, he's not playing that Claude Makélélé role that he used to play for Real Madrid or Chelsea, where basically like he was the linchpin in the midfield that sort of held everything together. And certainly as one of our most expensive players, that's kind of like what you'd expect, like not this sort of question mark of, so what did he do or what's he supposed to do?
But I don't want to regurgitate Cathal Kelly's argument, which was in the Star last week. I mean, that was his whole point, right? I think when I'm looking at how De Guzman's playing, I don't think he's playing that much different than the way Frings would play. I just think he's not as good as Frings, and we know that. That's not news to us. I mean, when you see him drop back to the back, that's what Frings would do, right? He's filling in that role. He's also giving some service when he can. I mean, that there was this beautiful through ball to
Eric Avila,
which to me was the reason why we came today. You know, you often talked about the fleeting moments of magic that can sometimes be seen on the pitch. It was a beautiful ball. That was worth the price of admission for me. And it came from De Guzman, and I saw him do a second one like that today. So I seem to see him giving that service. I just, he's doing both positions. I think he's doing a lot. I think, we're frustrated that he's not in Frings. We know that. He's no Frings.
Sure. I appreciate that. What I have continually struggled with since he joined the club is really, what is he though? You know? Like and I think it's a valid question, and it's a valid question that many fans or supporters or watchers of Toronto FC have had, is given the volume of investment, what do we net out? What is the return that we're looking for from this investment? Certainly not going to be goals. Is it going to be assists? If that's the case, then in every metric you could imagine, like the answer's, you know, left wanting.
He's one of our own. I think that when they brought him here, they wanted to bring a Canadian player here and build from a Canadian base, right?
Yeah.
He was the local homeboy hero.
That's not the way to win cups, though, mate.
I'm not saying.
You know what? And we've done it throughout the last 5 years. We brought back Adrian Serio. We brought back Dwayne Di Rosario. And it was more, I think, a hometown thing necessarily than building a team around
anyone. And this was the only way we were going to get De Guzman. And everyone said De Guzman's the man. They brought him.
Yeah. And that was funny because I remember in one of the town halls, that was one of the guys at Toronto City. That was what he said. You guys wanted him.
Yeah.
We brought him.
You can't fault them for bringing him.
And you can't fault him for signing a paper.
But you know what, though? Shit doesn't work out every day. But you don't just blindly carry on, do you? Or do you? Maybe you do. You just carry on until it's...
I'm just saying it worked out the way it worked out, and now we're in it. So yeah, we got to deal with it.
That's one thing you can certainly say is this team is in it. Because we're three games into our opening of the season, and we pretty much left off where we've taken off from where, league-wise, certainly, we've taken off from where we were, and maybe early in the season last year. There doesn't seem to be any transition from finishing form.
Sure, but there's one thing to say about that, is that, of course, last year when we started off, we weren't competing in a region-wide tournament. And we weren't in the semifinals either. And that's one thing I think that's worth, you know, it's been a tough start to the league, but that's definitely something worth weighing into the performance we see. You know, is it worth that a result like today if they go into Torreon, Mexico and leave it all on the pitch and, you know, knock on wood, oh my God, they come away with a 2-2 draw or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then does that change everything that we're talking about from today, last Saturday, and the weekend before?
Sure. Okay, would you, no one would be happier to see them win the CONCACAF Cup than me. I think it requires a large leap of faith to imagine that would happen. But I think it would be impressive on every single possible level. And it would certainly cement this particular team in the annals of Toronto FC history.
It doesn't change how shitty they're playing.
Yeah, exactly. You can't say, but they're in the semifinals of the CONCACAF Cup. You know, and they're going to be going to.
And some people argue that cup isn't the important cup. The league is the important cup. To be able to win week in and week out.
That's what I've paid my money for.
Is more impressive because it shows that you have consistency. And, you know, anyone can win a game on any given day, right? So it might, you know, we might have just fluked our way through this.
Well, the other thing to put that in perspective, too, though, is. You know, the league is certainly a tough competition, but realistically, Toronto's goal, right, at this stage isn't to win MLS Cup, it's just to make the playoffs. Which, when you have 10 spots to make a playoff, but only one team can win the CONCACAF Champions League, and it's a tournament that goes over two parts of a season, you could argue that
there's some prestige to it.
Sure. And I'm also just saying that's something that's
huge.
That's a little bit trickier, I think, especially when for us it crosses over two seasons, whereas like Mexico, when they get into the group stage, they're starting their winter, their fall winter season, and it carries through till the end of that season. So they're playing through a season the whole time. They're not stopping and starting.
So do you think that Vinter has thrown his hat in the CONCACAF Cup? And that's really kind of what he set his sights on, and that's why
they rested Sorsma for
that's why we're seeing better performance in the league, or better performance in the cup versus what we're seeing in the league.
I do think so, and I think the players probably have a bit of that in them as well.
Where so once like, the contest has done, then we're going to see the real Toronto FC in the league.
That's If you want to, I know you're fishing here. You got the line in the water, Tim. You're waiting for my response.
I'm not saying
I'm not saying it like that. They're just going to turn it on once this tournament's over with. It's not as easy as that. But it's the same thing as you see in a lot. You got a lot of in England right now. Teams are down to the wire, and they're saying, you know, is Chelsea going to focus on the league, or are they going to focus on the Champions League? Well, they're in the semifinals, so
they're trying to take it one game at a time.
Yeah.
Why aren't we?
Look at that starting lineup tonight. You don't think we took it one game at a time? We didn't rest.
Just out of respect for the people that have paid good money.
We did.
Money
they can't necessarily,
not disposable money that they can just like, oh, this is, you know, it's a waste.
I don't think they're
playing. Respect for
way.
The people that turn up to actually watch these games and pay to see it. I would expect that the team will come out and put in a good show. I wouldn't just say, oh, let's go all candid and half-hearted on this one.
I don't think they did.
And I don't think that was necessarily the message that they would have been giving in the locker room, because they still put out, except for maybe Logan Emery, if I'm thinking, that was really the only name that stood out that didn't play in midweek. So they did put out their usual starting 11,
or some
of their best players.
There was only the one.
So there was an opportunity there, and I think we should sort of segue more into the game at hand, because... when we were walking back, you know, the first thing I said to you, Steve, was like, that was shit. But it had to be said within the context that I was just kind of pissed. It wasn't the game was shit. It was that I was frustrated. Well, it was a frustrating game to watch.
I didn't think it was shit. I mean, I know both of you guys thought it was shit. I was just as upset as you guys were, but I was frustrated because they couldn't score. I wasn't upset by them not taking it to them. And this was a game that I saw them play the whole game, which is sometimes not the case. And even with Santos Laguna, like the last 20 minutes when they couldn't do anything, I felt like we witnessed the collapse again, the traditional last half collapse a bit, because they'd run out of ideas. We've talked about them running out of attacking ideas. I don't know if we didn't see that tonight. We saw lots of people. We saw them attack from different sides, different ways. They might not be good at attacking. They might be hampered by their strategy, their formation and their strategy, mm-hmm. in terms of playing the two teams. But they I wrote down that they were right. That almost every other minute there was something they came at us, and it was a missed chance in almost every opportunity.
And it was.
I just want to say, like, after three games on being negative goal difference -6,
yeah.
and 0 wins and 3 losses, like you can't. I'm struggling to say, like,
the result. The result doesn't show anything.
This is a positive. This is like, I'm struggling with the concept that you can lose three games in a row,
yeah.
have 7 goals scored against you, and
Tim.
Score one, and it's like anything other than just like a.
It's going to be a bloodbath the rest of the season, buddy.
But that's what it's
going to get worse.
Keep it real, then. Keep it real, Steve.
It's only going to get worse. This is the only time
Let's
I
keep
can
it
say.
Real. Like, I mean,
am keeping it. I think that they played great today.
It's half chances. And
what are you saying? If
the point of the game was to get the ball as close to the net without actually scoring, we'd be the fucking world champions.
I agree.
You know, they'd have a statue built for this team. But that's
there'd be a statue with the ball just to the side of the net. It'd be like a half post. It'd be a post, and then the ball would be beside it, not in the
I
net.
Mean, but
let's put it in another perspective.
I couldn't qualify this as a good game.
I'm going to put it into your perspective. I'm going to argue your point for you.
Please do.
Columbus had 3 chances on net, and they scored on one of them.
That's how you win games, Steve. That's how you win games.
That's how San Jose beat us. That's how San Jose beat us too.
If you can have 3 chances and score one goal versus having 100 chances and scoring 0 goals.
I'm making your point.
Yeah, you're making my point. So I'm a bit edgy here, you know.
Don't shoot the messenger.
So this is one thing I wanted to talk about though was the opponent at hand, and this is where we haven't really gotten into the game yet.
I know.
We're 20 minutes in.
It's like
But it's like the good old days. Yeah, it's like, I haven't even been drinking.
The thing is that we talked about the game all the way here, and we've just jumped to theory right now. Yeah. We've moved on to our analysis.
And I feel sorry for the listeners that they couldn't come along with us. I should maybe have the recorder when we're walking back, and then I'll like
get one of those GoPro head cams like this.
Mm-hmm. But anyways,
what so next Sulzma.
Yeah. Okay, come on, hold on. Let me get into this, because yes, I wanted please. To say. I kind of touched on when I was saying the game was shit and the frustration, and part of that too was that even before this game, it looked like there was an opportunity against Columbus, that they were a team that was still finding their feet, and their team, I kind of likened them to sort of like Chicago was last year, where that great team from 2008-2009 had sort of eroded away, and the players like Blanco and William Condé had all gone. And same thing with Columbus, where they've sort of over the years have gone by. You know, Frankie Hajduk has left. Shalado's left. Robbie Rogers left this year for Leeds. So the players that were like really something special from like 2008-2009 that made Columbus one of the best teams in the league are all gone. And they brought in a bunch of new guys, some Central American, South American players. The one name that was out there was that Morosevich, who was playing in Chile. And they had like mixed results. They had the result at home against Montreal, but they also lost away to Colorado. So, you know, just extrapolating that information, you're sort of saying this team hasn't quite found any consistency. They didn't look very good on the road, and it looks like they have a lot of new faces that aren't quite in sync yet. And that was our opportunity lost, I thought. And we saw it through the game. They only had those three chances, and the rest of it, there wasn't anything great. They weren't really putting us, you know, on the back of our heels for 90 minutes. That wasn't the case at all. And that's sort of where the frustration lay the most. And you could see it from the beginning that Toronto was actually pretty lucky that they didn't come out like San Jose did, because it would have been 1-0 earlier on. But luckily for us, really the only chance in the first half was a controversial penalty.
Yes. That happened at the 40th minute when Ty Harden was didn't touch this guy.
Certainly, then. Controversial is the right way to look at it. From the Columbus standpoint, it was a gift. Hardly any, or if no contact between the Columbus player and
Vargas,
and then they got squared up for a penalty, and Kosic thankfully saved it, pushed it away behind for a corner.
And those are the big moments you want to see in a game.
Yeah, I mean,
that was the best part of the first half. The first half was sleepy.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, okay, maybe that'll wake us up. The half ends, and then we go into the second half. And if I remember correctly, the substitution at the half was Dunfield out.
Sulzma off.
Oh, right. Silva for Sulzma.
Right, okay. That's the one.
And I thought that was a very wise choice, because Sulzma looked like he was struggling big time with the last ball on the wing.
Yeah, it seemed like a black hole every time the ball went up.
He was taking corner kicks again.
And
he told him he could do that.
And he wasn't running up. So the pass was being made under the assumption that he'd be running up, and it would just like roll off for a goal kick.
Yeah.
He's like 20, 30 yards away.
If it's a good way to turn over the ball, just kick it to Sulzma.
It wasn't his best one. He's had a couple of decent games, but today was you're going to have a game here and there, but I don't know, Steve, what else you got there?
Well, I mean, I think you get a big play like that, and that's a chance to rally your team. It happened at the end of the half.
Huge.
And I think it did have an effect, because I think TFC came out and took it to them. Plata had a chance at the 48th minute. Danny missed a shot on the 50th minute.
Plata had a cross, like, full volley on the turn.
Yeah, Plata had a cross at the 51st minute. Like, this is like minute by minute. At the 55th minute, there was a pass. Eckersley was working down the side on the right side at the 60th minute. Right.
With Eckersley on the right, though, he did look like
Only at the end. I think at the beginning, when he was first attacking, he looked good. But then I think his legs got the worst.
Switch in.
But you got
his legs got the worst of him, and he took a knock in the first half to the same leg that he got
studs up challenge to his knee
on Wednesday. Ouch. So I was thinking maybe he's feeling this a bit more, but he didn't show it, and he continued to at least go at it. But he was, you're right, he didn't look very effective after he was running out. When you talk about the lack of imagination, I think of Eckersley in the second half of the second half. Because he still was getting the ball, but every time he would do the same play.
He was out of gas.
And I was pleased to see that he got the man of the match, because the service he was providing Kosic was amazing.
and it also kind of fits in the theme that we do on this podcast, that it's every week, it's the employee, you know, it's the employee of the week, right? So it wasn't necessary for this game, it was for last game. But last game, they had to give it to Reggie Lamb, I think it was Reggie Lamb, because he was looking good on the game before, you know, so you gotta kind of, you gotta spread it around. You don't want the other employees to think that, you know, it's not fair that everyone doesn't get the Aspireman.
Picked the long straw.
It's kind of like, you can imagine like a McDonald's, they have like team player of the week.
That's what we're talking about. It's exactly what it is. Where it's just like, oh.
It's an employee benefit thing.
Exactly. Something like that. Shall we go into that? Do we even have a man of the match? Is there a Omega Man of the match?
For me, without a doubt, it's Kosic for that save.
Yeah.
It has to be. And that's why it shocks me that he kind of, like, Richard Eckersley gets chosen. I mean, whatever. Nothing against him.
He leaves it out there. You can't deny that.
The contribution that Kosic made in really basically, like, if that ball had gone in the back of the net, the game would have been over really early. Mm-hmm. And it was a terrible circumstance that it was occurred to happen. Yet again, the terrible refereeing within the MLS.
Woof.
Terrible.
That linesman made some doozies. I don't know if you saw it.
I think like when they hire these people, they must like hire them from like a school for the blind or something like that.
From the CNIB.
Yeah, it's like, you know, how's your eyesight? Terrible. Oh, what you doing on Saturday?
You're hired.
Come down to an exhibition. We got a little kit we're going to throw you in.
An Omega Man of the Match?
I probably would have picked Kosic as well, but I think it's worth mentioning. I kind of thought, because Plattis sort of had a slow start to the year, I thought he looked a lot better than he has in the first week.
He showed a lot of heart, and I think...
He was winning a lot of battles with guys that were twice his size.
I heard a comment from somebody behind me saying if other people could play like Plata. I don't agree with that being the Omega Man of the Match, but I'm not saying he's the man of the match. He played a lot with a lot of heart.
Yeah, I would probably go with Kosic because of the save, but I feel like there's one or two guys that I thought played a pretty solid 90 minutes, and I thought Plata was one, especially considering I don't think he's looked that great this season. So for me, that's encouraging that at least he put out 90 minutes going back and forth. He was doing running back at both ends, and he wasn't kind of like doing that usual 1v1 down the wing where he kind of leads himself too far and it's just the defender just kicks it away.
My Omega Man of the Match would be Ryan Johnson again.
Again!
And the reason why...
You know what? I thought he played a good game too.
Is that he did a lot of hard work on the wing, and the only long ball that was effective this game happened at the 77th minute when he beat two players, crossed it to Danny Coverman. Danny headed on to Silva, but Silva didn't finish. He did get a shot off, but he didn't finish. And I felt that was the other magic moment of the game. I felt there was two magic moments of the game, that being the second one, and it all started with Ryan Johnson and all that extra work that he did on that wing to get it in through. And I felt like he was doing it all game. And if I was to do a reverse Omega Man on the match, it would be Danny Coverman's.
Oh,
because I felt I feel like he didn't add anything to this team.
Outside of
Nick Soelsma, of course. Nick Soelsma, maybe.
He's living on scraps.
But
you
I
can't
also
blame Danny for not getting service.
I also feel maybe he's being played out of position, but I felt at times...
You said he's better as a number two.
I feel like it. I've seen him play better as a number two than a number one. And, you know, when they used to have Ryan Johnson up front, I felt that was a better connection.
Well, hold on, because there was a really good The Soccer Show on Fan 590. Yeah. I had an interview with Ryan Johnson yesterday, and he had a really interesting thing where he was saying they've sort of switched his position up, where he's more of like an attacking midfielder. And he's used to be playing as a forward. More forward and being as a target man. But now he's sort of playing this role where he's got to be – it's more like he's – you can see him running all over the place. And he's just like –
from outside. I see him on the flanks.
And he's like, I'm not used to – you know,
he's trying to figure out this position.
He's happy to be a part of the team. He's like, I'm used to getting more touches on the ball.
I don't mean to, I know it's a long healed ago wound, or maybe it's just a little bit of a scab on it, but I don't mean to pick that scab off again, but I can't help but thinking what a great combination Danny Covermaz and Dwayne De Rosario would be together. I mean,
I agree.
Anyway, yeah, but wait, hold on.
Don't have to dwell on it.
Yeah, but we got, nobody.
You clever.
That's hilarious. We got nobody for De Rosario because there's nobody left.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Whose trade was that?
You got me.
That was Di Rosario. There's nobody left from that trade.
Who was responsible for that trade?
That was whoever. That was Toronto FC's work. I'm not going to pin it on
them. I don't think anyone's going to put their hand up for that one.
No.
I don't know who did it.
All right, so we got Santos Laguna Wednesday night. That's going to be interesting. Whoa. To see how the guys recover from today and what they're going to put on display.
We saw what happened to Seattle down in Mexico.
Yeah.
Seattle had the upper hand going into that one, and big time. And then they flew all the way down there, and I don't know if they were nerved because they thought they were going to get caught in some drug deal crossfire or something like that, or what have you.
But the same rumors are circulating in our stadium.
But the way that Santos played against Seattle down in Mexico, I mean, they tore them limb from limb. Seattle didn't have a hope. And can we expect something similar for ourselves down there?
Do we need to revert to the diving game?
Do we have a diving game?
I don't think we do. We might have to learn it quick.
But you know, we've been a victim of the diving game.
The diving long ball.
Yeah. But it'll be interesting, definitely, to see, because Seattle made a huge mistake in that away leg, where they thought they could get by with three guys at the back and that they could go toe to toe on the counterattack. So I don't think Toronto has any illusions that they're going to
need like eight or nine at the back.
Yes, I'm looking at a 1-9-1. Something like that. I've got to make sure I can do the math in my head quick. A 1-9-1. Something to that effect, I think, is what we might be seeing in Mexico.
Well, it's we've said this so far, like, about the Champions League and Toronto, that this is the biggest game they've ever played, but certainly the Santos game away is going to be the biggest game that they've ever played, just in its importance. And we certainly do wish them a lot of success and luck down there, and I think probably luck will play a strong part in what's going to happen when they're down in Mexico. And it'll be very interesting to see how they fare.
And I did get that wrong. It'd be a 1-8-1. I don't want anyone commenting on the site about that, because they will, and it pisses me off. Send me an email. Don't write a comment at the bottom. All right, so we're going to wrap this up, and we'll put it together sometime midweek. We'll pull a team together to get that one out. And then we got Montreal next weekend in Montreal. That's going to be a huge one. And then I think our next home game.
Stadium.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of activity, a lot of games. And, of course, remember, you can always stay in contact with the site. You can either send us an email on
haveyoursay@rednationonline.ca.
Or info. If you can't be bothered to write have your say, just type info@rednation.ca or rednationonline.ca. And also you can follow us on Twitter as well, and use the hashtag ESSU. ESSU.
All right. Who's on the right? Who's on the left?
TBB.
Yeah, and Sparks in the middle. Catch you later. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Eastside Stand Up is the only TFC specific podcast breaking down the game right after it happens. We want you to get involved. So if you're watching the game at home, or even through the week, come up with something, reach out to us on Twitter, #ESSU, or @ClarkRNO, or @RedNationOnline. Email us at haveyoursay@rednationonline.ca and help direct the discussion. Get your opinion across what happened on the pitch today.